I'd like to take just a moment to introduce our special guest, Jim Scott. Jim is widely known to the UUs for his anthem, Gather the Spirit. He played for years with the Paul Winter Consort and has made a number of recordings of his own music. He has a long UU history, having visited more than 500 UU churches, and has several songs in both Singing the Living Tradition and the new Singing the Journey hymn books. He was co-chair of the UU Ministry for Earth and helped create the Green Sanctuary program. With a grant from the Fund for UUism, he arranged and edited the Earth and Spirit Songbook, an anthology of 110 songs of earth and peace, and a great resource for our workshop and RE. So thank you again very much.
It's good to stay connected to your higher power, I'm told. The church that has half forgotten the Creator in its pagan worshiping of the creation. The church that those right-wing radio ministries have warned us about. This church of bleeding heart liberalism. Some thinly veiled front for leftist politics. Of homosexual propaganda. I like it here. The church that tells you you won't be going to hell no matter what you do in this life. And the church that often leaves the first few pews open for the diversity we're sure is going to show up. We are open to it. The church of practicing witches, whose very assertion they don't believe in any devil, confirms they must be accomplishing some of his work. And the church that sings carefully, not sure if there are any words we can totally subscribe to and not be questioning ourselves tomorrow or in the next worship committee meeting. The church that is, in fact, wonders, in fact, if there is anything that we can celebrate with that passion and abandon those other churches hold for Jesus the Savior, Son of God the Father, although something lurks in us, we might be missing out on some of their fun. It is that search for ecstasy, enlightenment, and other things, including free coffee, which is often the only thing whose origins we don't question, that brings us together. This is my church, and I'm a zealot. This is the church that says to everyone, you're not only welcome, but we need you and your creative input in our continuing, dynamic, and evolving culture. Diversity is a strength, a survival mechanism we believe in. We face the challenge of weighing new and ancient wisdom in our search for guidance in this life, as well as the continuing creation of our own mythology. It's not an easy job. And we come together in meetings like this to offer each other ourselves for sustenance. That was a great longtime friend, an African-American minister, used to say about this point. Well, that's about all I had to say. But I'm not going to stop now. Wow, yay, now something's going to happen. And I just want to say, I got an email a while ago. I've read that for a while now, and, you know, I'm afraid I might be redundant. I might have even read it the last time I was here. But people think it's funny, and it starts out funny. I hope it ends out poignant. But I said, the email was very friendly, but she said, I think it's important that we not... I was there with my Presbyterian relatives, and they laughed, but I think it's important that we remember we should not make fun of other people's religions. Well, I think, in my defense, this is the third time somebody's protested about it, and I would like to say that I think maybe they didn't hear quite what I said. I did say in the beginning, those right-wing radio ministries... That might have sounded derogatory, I guess. Maybe it was just my delivery. But I said, we're looking at all these other churches here in our most segregated hour, as Martin Luther King said. And these churches appear to be having a great time. They're celebrating, clapping their hands, and getting all excited about Jesus, my personal Savior, washed in the blood, you know, born again, all of those things. And we wonder, what do we have to get as excited about as these other churches? Well, we have our seven principles. Now, what's so funny about that? Because these are revolutionary, radical things that we embrace. And although we say to other churches, hey, we're just like you, but we're people of faith, but these are amazing things that we have thought a lot about and voted democratically on at our General Assemblies, the dignity and worth of every person, human rights, compassion in human relations, love, the free search for faith, religious freedom, encouragement of each other on our journey. And we say we don't have to think alike to love alike. We don't have to think alike to come to this worship together. And I guess we'd call that community. And then there's democracy. That's a little antithetical to some religions right there. We don't have a pope, you know. We don't have a big book up here with all the answers. We make it up as we go along, as I was joking about. With all the highest intent and responsibility we can put to it, we are making this liturgy as we go. And there's the goal of peace and world community, and so peace, and there's the interdependent web of all life, ecological or environmental, what shall we call that, earth. And, you know, we could think up some more principles probably and debate it at the next General Assembly. We keep on evolving like that. The idea that we're a stasis, that there's this little literal interpretation of an old book that guides us, is just doesn't work for us. There's a lot of wisdom there in those great stories, but there's great stories that continue to happen. And after 2,000 years of even that New Testament, there's a lot of other things that have happened. And if I heard someone say the other day, a very progressive, liberal Christian church, saying if Jesus were around, he'd be embracing climate change, and he'd be fighting against climate change and so on. So we take all of those things, wisdom. I said you won't be going to hell no matter what you do in this life, and a couple of people have asked me. I remember leaving my Universalist church. I'm old enough to be one U. Before the youths got together, I was six or seven. And I remember leaving the Universalist Church, and my dad saying to me, I guess hell came up in the service, and he said, we Universalists don't believe that a loving God would sentence us to an eternity of damnation, of hellfire. And that was a liberating thing to find out as a kid. And that's the gift we give to our children, to question this bombardment of sort of common accepted wisdom or religion that just infiltrates everything from Christmas movies to, public school, even as much as we try. We might as well acknowledge that there is a well-funded assault on religious freedom, on our separation of church and state. There are people, I even grant some of them good hearts, that they think that we'd be better off as a theocracy, that we'd be better off, there are people in our Congress that say this is a Christian nation, this should be a Christian nation, and we should somehow get rid of all those other people. It's pretty scary. There's that woman from Iowa who got elected even after she said, I got this gun, and in case the government comes after me, I got this gun. My gosh, she's in Congress now. Did she bring it with her? We have some remarkably ignorant people running our country now. And that's all I'm going to say about politics in this. But the reason they're there is because we're not involved enough. I'm not involved enough. I've been campaigning like mad the last few elections in Massachusetts, is where I live now. Used to live in Oregon. And I'm much more involved than I was when I was a very sophisticated young person that was above all that. I would show up on election day. But there's a lot more that needs to be done if we're going to save the country and the world and the climate and all. And, there it is. And thank you for listening. And I also said, the one other thing was, we could just remember that Unitarians... the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, I said, the Jesus, the Son of God, our Savior, all of that. That's interesting. I think many of us would say, okay, that's a nice poetic something or other, but that is not what this church is about. If that's the way you believe, of course, we can have an interesting conversation at coffee hour and And the way we work, you can probably get your own Sunday up here. But that is not what we subscribe to. We are the heretics. We lost the vote. See, back in 345 AD, they had this vote at the Council of Nicaea that for a brief time before that, Catholicism, if you want to call it, or Christian religion, the Holy Roman Empire, was Unitarian. One great mystery. Then they had this vote, and we lost. And the Trinity, the Father, Son, Holy Ghost, those mystics folks, they won, and it became a war through the Dark Ages. It was, a lot of deaths and forced conversions and all kinds of things until a visionary king in Romania says, let's stop killing each other over our religious differences, and we get what we call the freedom of religion movement, all the Protestant denominations, this country based on this idea of freedom of religion, many Unitarians involved in all of that. Was that enough of a disclaimer? I get tired of hearing people say, oh yeah, that Unitarian thing, that's where you don't believe in anything. That is just not true. We need to have our elevator speech, to say, oh, we believe in some very important stuff. Here's what it is. Because there's lots of folks out there that need us, I think. We're not about being missionaries. We don't go around knocking on doors and doing things like that. Even the UU Service Committee doesn't go and do missionary work. They just do help. And that's the way we like to work. So I learn from all of you every time my songs come from hanging out with all of you, too. And I guess we had an old bio there. I've been to over 600 Union churches now. I came here first with my friend Mark Bellatini, invited me back in, it was either 89 or 90 or something when I was here the first time. So I've watched you grow and love to come back every once in a while. So thank you for listening to that. Even when I don't see a lot of people under 21 in front of me, I like to put a kid's song in a program because kid's songs are sneaky and you can sing about all kinds of things in a kid's song and not scare anybody. It's just a kid's song. So I wonder if kids would like to come up front. Hi. Hello. There we got some kids. You can bring your big people with you if you want. Yay. Who's in second grade? Anybody in second grade? Yay, hello. Who's going to be in second grade next year? Maybe somebody.
Okay.
Who used to be in second grade? I wrote this song with a bunch of second graders. And they're pretty smart in second grade, I found out. They told me all about the rainforest, and we made a song about it. About the animals in the rainforest. There's a lot of animals in this song. And they told me about the four levels of the rainforest. Did you have that? Yeah, that's right. She said half of this, can I say it this way, the diversity of all of species, half live in the rainforest. And a lot of things we haven't found out yet, and they live up in the canopy, and they live all like that. All kinds of amazing medicines that we found from the rainforest. I didn't have that in the song. So there's four levels of the rainforest I learned from these kids. Four. Some human made that up, the four. I like to say I think we were thrown out of the Garden of Eden for dividing it into separate fields of study, but that's another sermon. That was for the old folks. On the ground level, turtles and leopards and snakes live in the shelter the understory makes. The ground is so soft and the air is so clear, with 300 inches of rain every year. Oh, let the rain feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song
kind of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. Now does that sound like a participatory refrain to you? You can sing it. Oh, let the rain feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life. Sing me the song of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. And down in the ground, the worms and the ants nurture the roots of the flowering plants. And up in the canopy, life is a breeze. Orangutans swing from the limbs of the trees. Oh, let the rain feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life. Sing me the song of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. Now, while some of us sing that part, we need an antiphonal choir to sing another part that goes, rain, come down. Rain, come down. If you got a higher voice, rain, come down. La, la, la. Rain, come down. Oh, let the
rain
feed the thirsty ground.
Rain,
sing me the song of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. And the third verse is, high up above, where the toucans fly, they're birds. Emergent treetops reach into the sky. There's more kinds of plants than anyone knows. Look out, there's a sloth hanging by her three toes. Oh, let the rain feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. And about this point, I like to put in the pop quiz. What were those four levels of the rainforest? Who can tell us? Can Kiss tell us one? What's one? The understory, yeah. All the stuff that likes to live in the shade of, you know, another one? The ground level, that's a good one. The canopy, yeah, that makes the shade for the understory. And, you know, a lot of people that, I would have said too, well, people suggest the underground. You know, I would have made that a level too, but that wasn't in the book. The fourth level is the tallest, biggest trees that stick up way up, sometimes way above the canopy. It's called the emergent level. And this other whole other species that just live up there in more sunlight and different rain pattern, different habitat. So that's the four levels. And this is my musical memory device. There's the understory, the understory. If you got a low voice, be the understory. The understory goes up and down. The understory. And the ground level, the ground level. And the understory, and the ground level. Find your level. Canopy, the emergent. Emergent. Oh, there's the ground. Emergent. And the under. The canopy. Emergent. And the under. The story. And the ground level. Canopy. The chorus. Oh, let the rain go. Thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. Oh, let the rain feed the thirsty ground. Sing me the song of life you sing, such a beautiful sound. What that shows me is there's all this stuff going on all around us, up in the air,
and down in the ground and down in the water all around us are all these things that are working together to keep us going. Well, kids, we're glad that you are here with us today, and kids are going to go to their classes to do something more interesting now. And who will speak for our ancestors? What physician do we have in our midst to trust with surgery on our Mother Earth? What politician anesthetist will we trust to control the valves attached to her veins? Who will understand that our relatives in delicate balance keeping us alive are not weighed against efficiency? And who will decide what is cost-effective when our lives hang in the balance? Will it be the one with the vehicle for escape waiting nearby who converses in terms of multiple use, acceptable risk, economy versus preservation? Who will defend the water-purifying beings in rivers, oceans, and wetlands? Someone who sees borders between countries? Who will defend that diversity of all species? The one who exhorts property rights? The one who won't open the doors of the United Nations to indigenous peoples? The one who is saved? Who will speak for our ancestors? Who will listen for the echoes of their footsteps in the ocean waves and their tears in the rain? Who will speak for our Mother Earth? Who will hear her breath on the wind, her pulse in the night and day, and understand her needs? I'm usually speaking to some pretty sophisticated people, and we all know that we're in trouble. The earth is in trouble. The very survivability of humans on the earth is a serious consideration. And what keeps me going is a feeling that I'm just a part of everything. I don't have the bearded old man in the sky to call upon to intervene in the Oscars or something. I never got it about the bearded old man in the sky. What I get is this very round woman in the sky. And I'm comfortable with her having a feminine aspect because she's our mother. Is she a deity, a goddess? That's nice poetry, but not exactly for me. She's our ancestor. Everything we are came from our earth, from her body. We are made, and we're constantly trading places with that body. We are made in her image. A little less spherical, perhaps, but we have all of those life systems that the earth has, that evolved. The earth evolved these things before we took our jangled masses of protoplasm and left the ocean and began to think we were separate. We had this model. If I'm not a part, so I'm a part of this, inextricably a part of this one system that is. Some people call it Gaia. It was James Lovelock's poetic term. A scientist gave us this poetic idea using the Greek goddess Gaia, sort of a Mother Earth figure in the mythology, although she has her vengeful side in the mythology. We wrote a big piece of music with the Paul Winter Consort called the Missa Gaia Earth Mass some years ago. Missa is Latin and Gaia is Greek. Who knew that? It sounded good. And it has been something I've been doing for my life's work, I guess, to celebrate this earth, this fragile system we have. There are some who say, oh, the system's not fragile. It's just, you know, humans could come and go, and the system will keep right on going. The dinosaurs left 65 million years ago, but, the earth is still going. But I like to think of it as a fragile system that supports us and consider its fragility. So if I'm not a part of the healing of that mechanism, I'm in the way. I'm part of the problem. So may we take a moment to just be quiet together and settle our minds and hearts and think of this connection to this amazing healing mechanism that sustains us. The air that we count on being breathable, and the sunlight that's sustaining us, the green things outside, they breathe out and we breathe in. And we're inextricably a part of this mechanism. Let's take a moment to be quiet together. You can stare off into space. You can close your eyes. You can just settle yourself in that comfortable place. Get your shoulders in a good place and, you know, let that tension go. For your feet on the floor. How is it that you can be comfortable? Sometimes imagining something that is just a really relaxing image. The cat on the sunny windowsill, they really know how to relax. Use something like that to put yourself in that relaxed position to let your mind either wander or quiet your mind to a nothingness. Some of us know that. Some of us have no idea what that is. And we can just take a moment to be here in a peaceful place supported by all of us thinking together. There's a power in this coming together in thought and prayer. We haven't identified what it is, but scientists tell us it works. Let's take a moment to be quiet together, and I'll bring us back with some music. I'll get quiet. Isn't that amazing? We can hear these things outside. I usually count seconds because I'm told often, Unitarian Universalist ministers have told me often these silent meditations go about 35 seconds or 40 seconds. And some ministers say, I really try to make it 2 whole minutes or something. I try to make it at least a minute to a minute and a half or something without testing people's patience too much. But I sat, and I usually count, I'm a musician, I know what about, 60 is and 120 metronome marking is. And here, I could hear the clock, you probably did too. The clock was ticking, and I counted 64 ticks of the clock once I realized it was there. 64 being a multiple of 16 and 4 and all of that, the way we count in music so much. It occurs to me we divide the world into those, you know, so much of the world uses that system, and we divide that into 60 seconds and 60 minutes and 12 hours, 24 hours, the earth warming up for 12 hours, cooling off for 12 hours, and each of 365 and a quarter trips around revolutions as it makes one trip leaning toward and away from the sun. We're made of that harmony. That forms, that melody and harmony is everything that we are. If the Earth's basal metabolism is changing, we have no idea what it's going to do to all of us. We know there's a lot of scientific studies of what has happened since we've had electric lights, and we've messed up our circadian rhythms, not just ours, but the whole, all of nature. And we seem to be hanging on, and great inventions like antibiotics seem to have had a life for a while and now not working as well as they used to. And so many of the things we used to do used to depend on the things we would buy, the brand names we knew. So much of it is not as good as it used to be. Our meat and vegetables are not as good. In some ways, they've been improved. In some ways, the shelf life has taken precedence over health. And there's an environmental group, some friends of mine, in the UK primarily. Their premise is it's too late. It's not that they've given up at all. It's not that they are not going to be activists. But their pitch is it's too late. You're not going to have the world you knew. It's not there. The world you knew 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly the world you knew 50 years ago, is not there, and we're not going to get it back. So the question is, how much later than too late are we going to wait before we change our ways? I had a reading I was going to read, and I'm not going to do it because I already talked a whole lot before. I'm a large white male, what can I say? I ask for forgiveness. This song, often I meditate, cogitate, procrastinate over songs for a long time, and the songs take me a while to write. I write it and correct it and change it and rearrange it and all of that. I wrote this song just boom one morning. I'd been thinking, bombarded as were you, no doubt, with the news of Somalia and the Sudan and Iraq and Iran and the refugees, the wars of destruction, the toxic poisons of war. War is about the worst thing for the environment. And as the old African saying goes, as when elephants collide, the grass suffers. The toll we're taking on the earth, this sheer biomass of humans and their technology, their ability to divert rivers and make make lakes where they weren't there, and in fact turn forests into deserts, and to make war on each other and the planet, has reached proportions and a speed that is just mind-boggling. So what do? Give up? I hope not. I hope we look to each other for that sustenance, a way to keep going. Some beauty and serenity is all about us still that we can turn to raise ourselves up. And this community of like-minded beings that we get to so privileged to hang out here in this presumption of religious freedom, and we get to celebrate what we're doing here, that's what keeps me going. I'm often in several Unitarian Universalist churches in a week, so I get well sustained. I wrote this song, though, just all of a sudden, as I said, because it occurred to me, I've written a lot of peace songs before, and to protest about war, okay, I've already done that. And something just hit me that in this, what is it that keeps messing us up? I know what's good for me to do in life. You know, I've read the books. I've seen all these scientific studies. I get Prevention Magazine. I subscribe to things my mother told me good things, but I don't necessarily do them. Why is that? I must be an addict. I must be alienated. I must be wounded to the point where I have to fill this emptiness, this pain, to mask the pain while we're out there participating in killing the life spirit. I am waiting in the silence. I am waiting for the dawn. I am often found in reverence, though from many sources drawn. It is not mine to fight for justice, for it will not be won this day. I am peace. And I am waiting for the lost to find their way. You'll not find me set in judgment of the vain or of the weak, but I rise to meet the weary with the solace that they seek. Still I have not fed the hungry, nor strewn wealth among the poor. I am peace and bring but mystery and the patience to endure. I cannot save the suffering from their anger and their pain. Only open doors of insight, so the healing comes again. To the proud I am elusive,
To the humble I am near. May the broken rise and look beyond the trappings of their fears. I am found among the seasons, autumn's death and spring's rebirth, as relentless their momentum as the turning of the earth. All are welcome in my presence, for only love can conquer hate. I am peace and for the harvest I have planted and will wait.
Well, I kind of take levities with this every, you know, and if I change the program, I'm so glad nobody felt the need to go like this. I know how we are. So, but time has gotten away from me again, and I'm going to shorten what I might have said in the sermon just to this one little story that's part of what I wanted to tell you. There's a wonderful Jesuit priest, African Jesuit priest, Uwen Akpen is his name. I heard him interviewed on NPR. He's written a wonderful book called Say You're One of Them about his life and the wars and just the horrific way that he grew up, rescued then by a monastery, and he grew up, you know, Catholic, then rescued and became a Catholic priest. So the book, Say You're One of Them, you know, that means if you say you're one of them, this could be life and death. He said on the radio, suppose somebody robs the house next door to you. They just clean it out. And you didn't even really notice it, but it all ends up in your living room. You give it back. Oh, yes, of course. You know, do you keep it? Oh, no, that would be to be complicit with that. Why then don't you give back what you've stolen from Africa? That kept me up for a couple of nights. You could put any continent into that sentence. That's what armies are for, is to defend that theft. The privilege we live with, we didn't earn. And From one perspective, we say we borrow it from our children or something, or have stolen it from our children. We're spending our children's inheritance, so on and so on. But also, we can't get by, if we're really going to talk peace. Nonviolence is wonderful. Listen a lot more than you want to talk. Accept listening to the other side and negotiate, even when you know they're wrong. And that's all wonderful philosophy. But until we get a glimpse of that theft and realize that you're not going to buy peace at the big box store, it's based on theft. That's what armies are for, is to keep that theft going. And if we want to not participate in that, it's a radical change in our behavior. Enough of that. People say when I talk and sing and I like this, people say, okay, I'm all inspired, or I'm all disturbed by what you just said. What do we do now? Well, I'm just a poet, you know. I just brought up the question, like we Unitarian Universalists like to say. We have questions for your answers, you know. This is not the church, the book with all the answers. So, I've tried to have an answer to that. And one thing is, well, you know, I helped invent the Green Sanctuary Program. And, you know, it's good to get connected to your community and become an activist and in some way just do a little something different than you were doing. That's one thing. But it has occurred to me, the greater thing that I would like to say, to my message as a musician, as an artist, is we have to reclaim our voices. In this participatory democracy, there is a certain force out there that would just have us be quiet and just go along with everything and just accept that horrific, horrible, disgusting person that is now in Congress or something, representing maybe not us, but somewhere the people who think we've only been here 7,000 years and the humans live with the dinosaurs, like the Flintstones. And you know, how is a person like that, an 80-year-old man, I won't mention his name, who's now in charge of the Congressional Environmental Committee, and he says global climate change is a hoax and all. We have to get rid of these people. I mentioned no political parties here. We had a real close election in Massachusetts in November. A wonderful public servant, I'll just say, Martha Coakley. I campaigned for her. She lost by the thinnest of margins to a real pro-business person who's going to be much more destructive to the culture that we've worked hard to build in Massachusetts. A little more work. For weeks after, I was, if I'd just gone out one more day, if I'd just knocked on some more doors, if I'd made some more phone calls, you can do that too. And if we all did that, this is what I'm going to say to every Unitarian Universalist church that I go to for the next 2 years. We have 2 years, a little less than 2 years, before a new leader of the free world will be elected, and a whole bunch more of those people, if we want yahoos that are going to drive us off the cliff, throw the poor people under the bus while they drive the bus over the cliff, you can sit back and let that happen, or we can do something about it. I didn't do it for decades of my life. But now I do it. And I'm not posing as holier than thou. But we got to raise our voices as, oh my God, I lost his name. A wonderful choral director that we claim as a Unitarian. This is my punchline, and I forgot his name. Oh my gosh, Corral. We claim him as a Unitarian Universalist because he led the Shaker Heights Cleveland church for a long time. One of his favorite phrases was he said, music and sex are too important to be left to professionals. We hope everyone is of a certain age in this room at this moment. We'll explain that to you when you're older. We could say politics, too. So here's a song for all that, raising our voices. My wish for you, as now we part, is for greater peace to fill your heart with dreams as vast as starry space. So hurt and anger know no place. May truth be shared and wounds be healed and joy for living be revealed. Through every fate and circumstance, may hope lead weary steps to dance. And may your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. I think we've put it in the program because I don't do it quite the way it is in the book, but this song is, who knows the number? The choir knows the number. 1059 in the blue book if you want to look it up, but don't take the notes too literally. I'm obviously doing it slightly different than what's there. The words are right. I'll sing a line, you sing it back, and may your life be as a song. Try that, and may your life be as a song. I'll sing resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light. Try that. Resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night, ever dancing.
May fears be turned with keen insight to wisdom for what's just and right. Where sorrow grows, compassion's strong, and pains will pass before too long. May the bounds of our diversity serve a richer harmony. May courage hold your heart so true to smile on love when it smiles on you. And may your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn, resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. Try the whole thing again, and may your life be as a song, resounding with the dawn, to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. Now this turns out to be a four-part round, ha ha ha, but I know we can do it in at least two parts if you'll self-select. Rather than this side or this side, you know who you are. If you can sing the second part, I'll show you where it starts. If you're unsure, stick with me. Then again, if you're more adventurous or creative or lost, be part three or part four. And may your life be as a song. And may your life be as sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night. Let's do it again. And may your life be as a song, resounding, and may your love to sing awake the light, then softly serenade the stars, ever dancing circles in the night, ever dancing circles in the night. Ever dancing circles in the night. When Wisdom was a striking young man, he met a beautiful woman named Love. Now, I'm not really sure who was the man and who was the woman. Maybe they were the same sex. I'd like to keep you, said Wisdom. You can't own me, said Love, but I love you anyway. What would it cost to know you'd always be there? Asked Wisdom. Don't ask such questions, said Love. Just look at the stars. Why? Wisdom pondered. Are they telling us something? Oh, chill out, chided Love. Which made Wisdom happy in a funny sort of way. And so it was that Wisdom fell in love with love and thus became truly wise.